greetings once again to everybody out there at TFMR. It is noon, and it is Thursday. That means it's time for another A2A webinar. This week, we've got a return visit of one of our best pals in the blogosphere, Dr. Dave Janda. Most of you are probably familiar with Dave. He is, Dave, is it fair to call you retired at this point?
Yeah, I'm retired from the active practice of medicine. Yeah, that's very accurate. January 2nd, 2017.
He's the youngest retiree I know, but he is retired from the active practice of being an orthopedic surgeon and now putting all of his attention not only into his web work, his website work, YouTube channel and everything else, but also his Operation Freedom radio program, which is just a must listen for everybody, if not live every Sunday, through all the podcasts that he posts immediately following. Anyway, it's great to have him back on. Dr. Dave Janda, thank you for joining us again.
And I thank you for having me back, Craig. It is you run the best website in the internet blogosphere, and that I'm not saying because I'm talking to you now. It is the truth.
Oh, you're so nice. I appreciate it.
And you know what? And here's the great the community, all the turdites out there, do such a fantastic job of adding such great content and insight. This is, you know, it's your stuff. I mean, you know, you're light years ahead of the analysis stuff, right? But then you add the community to it, and this is why the TF Metals report, I think, is so important.
Well, Doc, you're right, and that's what we've always, I mean, every time I get interviewed, that's all I ever, I always talk about what I do, but always stress the value of everybody else on the site, because it is the stuff everybody else adds is invaluable, and we've got a lot of folks listening today. You know, we do these webinars every week, and we use this GoToWebinar platform so that everybody that's listening can pose questions. So, Doc, as you might imagine, we're going to have a bunch of questions in queue we eventually have to get to. I also have three or four that were emailed to me ahead of time from folks that can't join us. But before we even get to that, I want to touch upon two things that have been a big focus of yours lately. And have you, again, I don't want to use up too much time doing this because I'm sure we'll have a bunch of other questions. But I want you to kind of summarize where we stand with both. Let's start with what you call Rhino Care. This idea that the Republicans in the U.S. Congress, particularly Speaker Ryan, are going to come up with an alternative. It's going to be three phases, allegedly, to repeal and replace Obamacare. We know that whole thing went up in flames about a week ago. But you know, what I wanted to ask you, Doc, you know, so many people are busy. We, you know, and even myself, I don't have time to pore over all of the details and all this, you know, and what made it such a bad alternative. So if you could take a second and, in your opinion, explain to everybody listening why that initial plan was so horrific.
So I have, thank you, Craig. I have gotten a lot of grief over the past 3 weeks for not supporting Ryan Care or Obamacare Lite or Rhino Care, but not spelled R-I-N-O, spelled R-H-I-N-O like the rhinoceros, because the rhinoceros, as I understand it, is one of the most oblivious creatures on planet Earth when it is facing danger. You know, most rhinos are killed at the watering hole, as I understand it, as they're drinking water, and they're just oblivious to everybody around with guns trying to shoot them, or natural prey. And so I called it Rhino Care or Ryan Care or Obamacare Lite. I got a lot of grief. And so the first thing I did is the same thing I did with Obamacare. I read it. And I have to tell you, when I read it, it was deja vu. It was as though I was back in 2009 reading Obamacare again. You see, the big problem I have with Obamacare is the same problem I had with Romney Care, which is the same problem I have with Ryan Care. And that is, it became very obvious very quickly that the insurance lobby, big pharmaceutical lobby, and the big medicine lobby were the authors of the legislation. And the reason why I realized that was the verbiage, because the verbiage was similar in all three. But also, if you looked at who benefited and who was targeted, it was the same. The healthcare freedom of every American was targeted in Romneycare, Obamacare, and RyanCare. And the beneficiaries were big medicine, big pharma, and big insurance. You see, the infrastructure of Obamacare was about creating this enormous bureaucracy to control people's health care freedom and essentially strip every American of their health care freedom and essentially control them so they can control how they live and basically down the line how they died. RyanCare did not repeal, they keep saying it's such a lie. RyanCare did not repeal Obamacare. It left the heavy infrastructure in place. But it did do a couple little changes, and even in my mind, even made it more egregious. In Obamacare, if someone did not buy insurance, and understand something, 12.7 million Americans chose to opt out of Obamacare and pay a fine or a penalty. Or a tax, if you will. 12.7 million people. More people, ultimately, that were actually newly covered under Obamacare. That 20 million figure is bogus. And we can talk about that as well. But what RyanCare did is rather than people that didn't have insurance pay a tax or a penalty or a fine, however you want to determine it or call it, to the government, guess what, Craig? If you didn't have coverage for 63 straight days, you paid a 30% surcharge to who? The insurance industry. That was a huge red flag of who wrote this. And then when you started doing some digging, and one of the guests I frequently have on the show, Dr. Chris Held, who's an ophthalmologist in Texas, she's also a very good healthcare policy analyst. And Chris and I were going through some stuff as we're reading through this thing, and there's something called DSH. Now, what that stands for is disproportionate share hospitals. So what happens is that a hospital right now receives money from the federal government for providing what they call uncompensated care. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So and in particular with Medicaid and people that don't have insurance. So what happens is that to help the hospitals, and this was true before Obamacare and in Obamacare, to help the hospitals, let's say the cost to a hospital of taking care of a particular patient that is indigent or is on Medicaid for a particular problem is, let's say, their cost. Is $1,000, okay? Mm-hmm. So the hospital, right, will, so that's their cost, but that's not what they charge, right? So they say, well, the cost of us taking care of this patient's not $1,000 because that's their break even, but the cost is $10,000, okay? So there's a differential there of $9,000, right? Their cost, so their profit margin, essentially, if somebody would just pay them cash, would be $9,000. Well, they report that to the federal government, and then the federal government takes taxpayer money and says, well, I'll tell you what, your charges, you say, are 10. Well, we'll give you 9 for that, okay, to make you whole because you're so good at taking care of patients on Medicaid and indigent patients.
Illegal aliens.
Well, right, okay? So you wonder why, if Obamacare was so horrible toward hospitals, you know, oh, well, this is going to really hurt hospitals, why have hospitals been going out and buying doctors' practices? Why have hospitals been going out and buying each other for huge amounts of money? Why are hospital CEOs making millions of dollars?
And they advertise their services all over television.
But you know, it costs. Well, you know, we're eating so many costs of taking care of these poor and indigent patients. And what they're not telling you is the other side of the story. The other side of the story is they're getting huge amounts of money from the taxpayer in these subsidies coming back through. What RyanCare did, Craig, is what was in Obamacare actually was that over time, very gradually, there would be start to be some cuts about how much the government would be kicking back to the hospitals in this differential. What Ryan Care did is it removed those cuts.
Oh, jeez, Louise.
It gets better. Here's the second thing. As Chris and I were going through this, in between 2018 and 2026, according to Ryan Care, they would appropriate $100 billion to states. Right? Now listen to this. Tell me the insurance companies didn't love this. So the federal government, over that 8-year time period, 2018 to 2026, they're going to give $100 billion to states. And they said, you're going to use that money because if you have a claim of a patient that exceeds $50,000 and up to $350,000, the insurance company, even though that person might have insurance, the insurance company isn't responsible for that. You are.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So in other words, what it incentivizes to do is at the minimum hospital bill anyone would have would be, if you will, $50,001.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
The state would have to pay for it. The state would have to pay for it out of this slush fund that the feds were giving them.
And the insurance,
but the insurance companies. No, the insurance companies won. And then there was a third part. And the third part is that, and it was an absolute gift to the insurance executives, it terminated the limitation on the deduction of remuneration for a taxable year exceeding $1 million for the top five earners of publicly held health insurance corporations like the CEO. So the translation of that is that with Ryan Care, insurance companies can now deduct huge remuneration packages that they could not do before.
Payment, salary, options.
All right. Yes. So you spoke of earlier about this three-phase. It has to. They said this is the three-phase plan that Ryan Care is about, and we're going to pass the first phase. And then phases two and three will eventually get to. Well, that's where all the competition is amongst the insurance companies, right? So in phase one, they're not competing. There isn't any of this across state line stuff.
Right.
And the reason why they constructed it that way was because Obamacare is imploding as we speak. We all know that, okay? Right. But Ryan Care would do nothing to prevent that implosion, and it actually, with the things I've already mentioned, would actually hasten it a bit to the point where phases two and three would never happen. Now, here's the interesting. Ryan is out there. Even Trump is out there. And I've gone head-to-head with the Trump people on this. Obviously, I'm pretty well persona non grata right now because I was one of the people who helped blow up that thing last Friday. They're out there saying, well, under reconciliation, we have to do this three-phase plan. It can't be all in one. So I asked a very simple question to the Trump people. If Obamacare in its entirety was passed into law in one phase under reconciliation, why can it not be repealed and replaced in one phase under reconciliation?
What'd they say?
They didn't.
Yeah, right. Well, because you laid out why.
Exactly. And here's the point. And actually, I got to give credit to Ted Cruz on this. Talking to his people, Cruz actually did some digging into this Reconciliation Act from 1974. And here's what it says. It says that it's at the discretion of the president of the Senate, who is the vice president of the United States, Pence. It is at the discretion of the president of the Senate, or the vice president of the United States, to determine how little or how much is to be in a reconciliation bill. It's not, it has to be a budget issue, or it has to be revenue neutral, or it has to, whatever other excuses they're making up.
Uh-huh.
That's all BS. It's all smoke and mirrors. They could put a 5,000-page bill through reconciliation based on what Ted Cruz figured out.
How about
now, the question is, well, what's going on here? Well, I have been at odds with Paul Ryan for many years because I believe Paul Ryan is a globalist, and I do battle with globalists because I believe that's who's trying to strip everybody of their freedoms and liberties, whether they're Republican or Democrat or Martian, I don't care. If they're a globalist, they're not looking out for you. Well, isn't it a note that Paul Ryan's wife is a former lobbyist for who? Blue Cross Blue Shield, Cigna Insurance Company, and the pharmaceutical industry. Okay? Now, let's look at Paul Ryan. Six of his top 10 donors were related to banking and finance, all of whom had tentacles or affiliations with what? Insurance companies. His number four donor was Pfizer, and his number six donor is Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so if you really want to know, if you really want to know what this is about, this was a bunch of insurance industry pharmaceutical lobbyists that got together and said, okay, we got to do some smoke and mirrors here. Hopefully the public's not going to catch on to this. We're going to try to jam this thing through really fast. Remember, that's exactly what they tried to do with Obamacare, and a number of us blocked it in July of 2009. Remember, they're all trying to get it through by the end of July. It was a mad rush, and a number of us blocked it. So here we go again. They thought they could jam it through and get this stuff through. And so then today, let's fast forward to today. I pissed everybody else off in Washington today. Trump is out there saying it was the Freedom Caucus who stopped this. No, it was the Freedom Caucus and the people that decided not to vote for this that saved your rear end. Because I can tell you this after reading Ryan Care. Ryan Care will finish off the healthcare delivery system. It will. There is no cost reduction with Ryan Care. People's premiums are still going to go up. The rationing is going to continue. The totalitarian overreach of the government is still there with all the agencies. If Ryan Care passed as written, I not only predict, I guarantee that the House and Senate would have flipped in 2018, and there would have been zero chance of Trump being elected in 2020.
Well, we'll see where they go next, Doc. It'll be interesting to watch it all unfold. I before we get too far down the road of time here, I've got to move on to another topic. But do you have anything else you want to add on that on Ryan Care before we move on?
No, we're good.
Okay. All right. That was a fiasco. You're right. We're lucky that, I guess, in a sense, that hard to believe we're lucky that Obamacare continues, but that's the road that we're on, apparently.
They would be better, Craig, if they repealed it completely and they just let free, just didn't do a damn thing. They would be better off, rather than having Ryan Care, if they just repealed it. And then just say one thing. Insurance companies, you may compete across state lines.
Yeah, go for it and let it all grow organically.
That's all you need. And actually, Ann Poulter wrote an article the other day about that, saying, this is really she said you don't even have to repeal it. Just allow insurance companies to compete. And that's what they want to avoid with at all costs. It's very evident. Ryan Care, Obamacare, Romney Care. The whole idea is collusion, not competition.
I was going to say,
and
is that
all you'd have to do is have them start to compete, and little companies would come in and take them on, and that is the end of the ballgame.
Yeah, because what they're protecting is the monopolistic power of the big insurers.
That's exactly it.
Okay. Doc, I've got, again, the best part about this format is that everybody listening gets to ask a question if they so wish, and a lot of folks couldn't make it, so I've got four questions that were emailed to me, and so I know I want to ask you about the other big thing you've been working on, which are the whistleblower claims by this Dennis Montgomery in conjunction with Mr. What's Binney's first name? I all of a sudden lost that.
William Binney.
William Binney. News even today that Ryan, Speaker Ryan, says that Representative Nunez has whistleblower type information. Really, imagine that. Again, all these dots connect that you laid out 2 weeks ago. We discussed them at length here at TFMR last week. Look, I'm going to use one of these questions that was emailed to me and let you kind of pick up and run with it. But again, keep in mind, we've got a whole bunch of other questions we've got to get to.
Yeah.
This comes from a user at the site called Silverbell, who wants to know what you think of this. Because knowledge of the intelligence agencies targeting government officials is becoming more widely known, particularly the disclosures of Dennis Montgomery, do you think there would be any interest in investigating what role such targeting and its potential blackmail might have played in Chief Justice Roberts' decision to hold as constitutional Obamacare? I'll just leave that there and let you go with it.
Well, I actually believe Dennis Montgomery already has that answer. I believe right now it's a classified piece, a document. When Dennis Montgomery, a little history on Dennis Montgomery.
Well, hold on. Before you get to that, I'm sitting here thinking, I should remind everybody with this. Remember, Obamacare was sold to everybody that it wasn't a tax.
Right.
No new tax. And then what was figured out was that these mandates were, in fact, a tax.
A tax.
And so, therefore, that's what went to the Supreme Court in whatever that was, 2012?
June, yeah, I believe it was 2012, yeah.
June of 2012. Roberts' opinion that day in supporting the majority and making it okay that it was a tax. He kind of assumed out of thin air, wrote it himself to say, oh, yes, this is a tax, which makes it constitutional. His opinion was almost like he'd written it the day before with what became the dissenting opinion, and then he just redlined a few things and changed a few words to make it sound like he was now with, you know, the other majority, the liberal majority, making it okay. And the assumption was at the time it was almost like, well, does somebody have something on this guy? Because it was like out of the blue he changed his mind from reading his opinion.
I have some sources tied to the Supreme Court. And what they told me at the time was that there was a 5-4 decision in favor of getting rid of Obamacare, that it was unconstitutional based on the tax issue that you just outlined. And in fact, Roberts was one of the five that voted in favor of getting rid of Obamacare and actually had written the majority opinion. And about 48 hours before that, so they decide, they write up their opinion, and then they make it public sometime in June.
Right.
And about 48 hours before it's made public, it's my understanding that he flipped his vote.
Which is what the opinion read like.
Which is exactly as you said, and which it absolutely drove Scalia crazy. I mean, as I understand it, I mean, screaming mad crazy. And it was my understanding that several of the justices actually paid Roberts a visit at his house trying to have him, like, figure out what happened here. I proposed at the time the only way somebody, because he essentially, he has not only changed his mind, but he rewrote the law, okay? I mean, he made a tax a non-tax and rewrote it all.
Right.
And not just his opinion, he rewrote the law. And this is why Scalia was so crazed about it. And I said to my contacts in D.C. at the time, somebody got to him. It's obviously they flipped him. And they flipped him based on something in his past. And I have to say the mass majority of the contacts in D.C. I talked about this to, because it was just so, you know. And I actually talked to a couple friends of his outside of the court who were absolutely beyond stunned or shocked.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had, before it came to the Supreme Court, they had discussions with him about Obamacare. And they said that they almost thought that, you know, he was, it was incomprehensible that he would have flipped like that.
Right.
So when people who know him for many, many years say that, And then you look at the timing of he voted for, I mean, confirmed, voted against Obamacare, then flipped his vote. It speaks of something being used against him. And I believe something was used against him.
Right.
And I believe that Dennis Montgomery has that information in his 47 hard drive. I believe that.
So is that, I guess that's all part of why he has, this Montgomery has been kept at arm's length from everybody. Though I know you're going to have his attorney, Larry Klayman, on your show on Sunday. Do you have any other updates that you can, I guess, provide us of what you've learned in the last 10 days?
Here's the story on Montgomery. Montgomery was actually minding his own business, working on some technology out in California for a company, facial recognition stuff. This is after September 11, 2001. He was working on this stuff, and he's a brilliant programmer. And it's my understanding that the NSA and CIA came to him and said, hey, we're really interested in this facial recognition stuff. So he started working with them. Right. And he developed a relationship with the NSA and CIA to the point where Brennan, who then became the director of the CIA under Obama, and Clapper, who became the director of the National Security Agency under Obama, he got to know them because he was working with them on these other projects. And they brought him in and asked him, as I understand it, as a consultant. He was not an operative of the CIA or an employee of the NSA. It's my understanding he was a contractor. And he developed the system that General Tom McInerney spoke about on my show 2 weeks ago, a platform called the Hammer, which was a platform where phone calls, emails, any type of communication could be hacked, stored, retrieved, and reviewed through this system called the Hammer. And it's my understanding that this platform, the Hammer, was used to do exactly that to hundreds of thousands, if not a million Americans, including members of Congress, judges, Supreme Court justices, business leaders, and one of the people in this, as I understand it, is Donald Trump.
Why wouldn't he be?
Of course. And it was that system. And in fact, when WikiLeaks last week released Vault 7, which was NSA, CIA documents and the like, the Hammer was mentioned in Vault 7, the Hammer platform. So it was confirmed to be in there. And it's this Hammer system that was utilized to hack Trump. So here's the interesting thing on top of all that is that, and Larry Klayman speaks about this and will on my show, Dennis Montgomery went to the FBI. Well, first he went to members of Congress. So remember how they give Snowden all this crap about, well, he fled the country and he didn't go to Congress. Well, he didn't go to Congress because exactly what happened to Montgomery. Montgomery goes to all these heads of these intelligence committees, and they all blow him off.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk to him. If they do, they just piss him off. Yeah, no, you know, we don't want to hear about this. We don't want to hear about it. We don't want to know. See no hero, evil, you know, the whole thing. So they don't want to deal with him. So he goes to Larry Klayman, and Klayman is tight with some federal judges. So Montgomery goes, this is what I got. I got these 47 hard drives, 600 million documents. And Larry has these judges talking, interviewing Montgomery and doing all this stuff. And these judges are like, whoa, I mean, this is beyond unconstitutional. This is criminal.
Like that guy Snow or whatever his name is down in Arizona.
So they take Montgomery – along with Larry, to the FBI 2 years ago. 2 years ago. And they depose Dennis Montgomery on video at one of the FBI headquarters on what he knows, who was surveilled, how they were surveilled, the illegality of it, and the unconstitutionality of it 2 years ago. Comey was aware of this and completely sat on it. And a week and a half ago, when he was in front of Congress, they asked him if he was aware of any instance where Trump could have been surveilled. Comey was aware of Montgomery's testimony under oath and his video testimony. Yet Comey said, no, I don't have any evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Larry then went and tried to meet Nunes, who's this guy out there talking about this, right?
Right.
About Montgomery saying, wait a minute, Comey said this. This is perjury.
Yeah.
Because he's aware of this stuff. Nunes would not even meet with Klayman, but his chief of staff did. And Larry Klayman went to the chief of staff and said, listen, your boss better get off a dead center on this, because if not, he's going to be part of this cover-up, because I'm going to go out and become public. And essentially, the response of Congress was, you know what, nobody in the media is going to bite on this. Enter Admiral Ace Lyons, who sends the information to General Tom McInerney, who comes on my show last Sunday, or two Sundays ago, and spills the beans about Montgomery and the hammer. And that was on Sunday, and by Monday afternoon, Nunes comes out and says, well, I've been apprised of some information from a whistleblower.
And it was the following,
really?
The next day, Wednesday, that he was at the White House.
And then he's at the White House a couple days after that. So the bottom line is, the lamestream fake media would never have, and I don't even know how much they've already touched it to date. They just kind of maybe bite at the edges a little bit, maybe, some of them. But I haven't seen even the hammer mentioned a significant degree on, you name it. I mean, it's just, I mean,
yeah.
Forget it. You'll never see it on CNN or MSNBC or any of these others. But even Fox is, and as I've always said, Fox is part of the problem, not part of the solution, because they're part of the syndicate as well. But you don't even see it there. And it's really the alternative media and the internet that has made the hammer even the least bit knowledgeable about what it's about to the public. So now you got Ryan going, well, now there's a whistleblower out there. Yeah, that whistleblower has been out there for at least 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys, every single one of you, has ignored it. Not only ignored it, you've covered it up.
Well,
one of them.
It all fits to their own ends.
It all fits to their own ends. And the reason is because the deep state, or the New World Order, the criminal international banking syndicate, the globalists, the same people that manipulate the price of gold and silver every day, are the entities behind the surveillance program of every American. And many people, Craig, say, well, you know, I don't have a website like TF Metals Report, or I don't have a big mouth on the radio like Janda, so I don't have anything to worry about. Wrong. Wrong.
Right.
They are in everybody's business 24/7.
Right.
And
right.
Montgomery has 600 million documents to confirm that.
All right, Doc, you still got Larry Klayman scheduled for your show on Sunday?
Yeah, he'll be on, and so will Dr. Jim Garrow, who will also be on later in the show that day.
Terrific. We'll definitely. I know you like to stop by TFMR and post all the podcast links.
Oh,
please,
yeah.
Do that.
Yeah, we'll post them up as soon as they're ready.
I want to be respectful of your time. We've actually, I know this is kind of hard to believe, we've been at this now for more than a half an hour already. So. I know, and I want to be respectful of your time. So I'm going to start burning through some of these questions.
Yeah, I'll give you quick answers.
My goodness, it must be 10 in queue, and I've got three more still that were emailed. So I'm going to hit you with these, and we'll just kind of go through them. This follows along a little bit with the Rhino Care discussion we had earlier. This comes from Gabe. Just wants to know if you think, from a political standpoint, that Trump had planned in advance to pull that bill because he wanted to expose Ryan's disloyalty, according to Gabe, and lack of leadership in failing to deliver the needed votes, you know, as a way of getting rid of Ryan, maybe putting somebody else in.
The answer to that is I believe that is the case, at least for half of the faction in the White House. Right now, there are two factions in the White House. There's the Bannon faction, who I support and I deal with, okay? And then there's the other faction, which is the Rentz-Priebus faction, which is the Rhino faction, okay? And there is, and I'm not going to say there's a civil war. I'm going to tell you that there are two separate and distinct factions. So I do believe that Trump did get religion. He did listen to Bannon. And I do believe that, yes, the way that was played was for, I think, to give Ryan enough rope to hang himself.
Right. Okay.
Now, that doesn't – now, this morning, we, you know, Daddy was out there tweeting this morning that, well, you know, the Freedom Caucus has to get their act together and that kind of stuff. And I'm going to go talk to the Democrats. Oh, come on. The Democrats are never going to repeal Obamacare, and the Democrats are never going to give you any type of free market reform that's needed. So what does that tell me? That tells me that the Priebus side was in Big Daddy, was in Daddy's ear this morning, and that's why he tweeted what he did.
I always thought that our president had a pretty bad case of ADHD. That's a good way to use it to your own ends, I suppose, just to put it in front
of them. And understand part of this faction. And part of the faction on the Priebus side is that Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, and his daughter, Ivanka, they're married, obviously, they're kind of on that Goldman Sachs, Rentz-Priebus side, as opposed to the populist Bannon side. Yes, I know Bannon worked at Goldman Sachs, but in speaking to folks that were partners at Goldman Sachs, and I've done that, Bannon was never he was never on the inside, right? He was one of the outliers. And understand Bannon's background. Bannon, his background, he's from the Office of Naval Intelligence, okay?
Oh, he is? That, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh my God! Wow,
no, very few people know that, but that is where Bannon is from. And in my experience in Washington, the most feared, the most thorough, the most stealth intelligence agency that our country has is the ONI, and I believe it's the intelligence agency that, in my mind, has the most credibility.
And once ONI, always ONI, they say, right?
Well, yeah.
All right. Let me hit you with the next question. This comes from Lyndon. And these are two in a row that are topics, kind of, let's call them natural health topics.
Okay.
More with your health background. Lyndon's first wants to know, he's seen many websites and heard many testimonials about people with a variety of cancers being cured or at least treated with cannabis oil. Do you, Dr. Dave, know of anyone who has been cured of cancer by taking cannabis oil?
I do not. I'm not familiar with the research on cannabis oil for malignant conditions. But when we're done today, I'm going to do a little research on that, but I do not. Right. That doesn't mean it can't work, because I wasn't an oncologist by trade, obviously.
Right.
But here's my philosophy about cancer. When you have cancer, any port in the storm, right?
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Yeah,
okay?
No, that's right. Yeah.
You know, and I am very different than most modern Western medicine trained physicians in a sense that I do believe that a combination of, if you will, well documented research based, non bought off research, with standard treatments along with alternative treatments, I'm all for it. I mean, that's what I would do.
No, I hear you. Exactly right. I mean, you're dying anyway. So, I mean, what the hell?
It's your ball game, and you know what? If who you want pitching for you, it's your call.
That's right. All right, then the next question has to deal with another topic that gets bandied about here quite a bit, and that's colloidal silver. What do you think of that? And if you like it, are there, you know, there's all kinds of brands out there. Is one that you feel the most comfortable with?
Well, I'm looking at a big bottle of it now. I actually believe in it, and I actually use it, and I actually I truly believe it makes an enormous difference. And I must say, my wife was skeptical. Her initial response, well, it's silver. You love anything silver. This is why you think it works. I go, come on, really? So she was starting to feel a little bit, you know, there's this thing going around her office. And I said, let's just jack you up with a little colloidal silver. She got things turned around so quick while everybody else in her office was sick for 2 weeks, she has now become a believer. So I get mine. It's called Sovereign Silver Bioactive Silver Hydrosol. It's manufactured by Natural Immunogenics. That's what I get. There's a particular health food store that I go to, and this is the one they carry. It's in a big brown bottle. And, you know, of course, it's expensive. But I'll tell you, I'm a firm believer, and I just don't wait till I get a cold. I take a little bit every day.
Fair enough. And what was the name of that brand that you use?
It's made by, and it's carried in most stores, I believe. The website is sovereignsilver.com, S-O-V-E-R-E-I-G-N, silver.com, and it's made by... What did I tell you here? It's made by Natural Immunogenics. They're out of Sarasota, Florida.
All right. Fair enough. Now, I've been reading while you've been talking a really long question from somebody on the site named Ted. I think I can summarize this, though I might not be doing justice to it. And I think it kind of lines up with a thought that I had recently. It was that why can't you just simply have – I mean, if there's – 20 million uninsured people out there, and maybe that there's kind of a moral hazard there, and that everybody would become an uninsured, and you'd end up with just a government-paid healthcare program, which is where that all seems to be going in the first place. Nonetheless, why couldn't you just have a gigantic government, let's call it pool, maybe supported by some 1% tax levy, or I'm just whatever. I'm just thinking out loud, and that pool is what is tapped for any uninsured person. To pay for their healthcare costs rather than, you know, trying to cover the 20 million alleged uninsured by making my premiums four times what they used to be. Mm-hmm. Why can't everybody else just continue in the existing system and we come up with some kind of slush fund for those that don't fit within the system?
Well, it's a great idea, and it's been done before. You know, prior to Obamacare, there were 35 states that had that type of what's called a high-risk pool. That if you had a pre-existing condition or you didn't have the money, you, depending on what state you lived in, there were 35 states. Some of the biggest states, like New York, didn't have it, unfortunately. But with these high-risk pools, people would be in these high-risk pools. It would be funded through state, through the feds. How much you paid to be in that high-risk pool was dependent on your income. And if you didn't have much income, you were covered completely. And in fact, there was a fellow on my show. I've had him on several times. He's an insurance guru, but he's not part of the insurance syndicate. He's kind of an outlier in the insurance industry. His name is David Powell. And I've utilized, we've tried to take this stuff and jam it at Trump because David comes up with this scenario and this very easily implemented plan. In fact, it could be implemented within 24 hours. Of these high-risk pools being implemented. So rather than 35 states, if you had all 50 states doing this, the total cost to the federal government would be about $45 billion. Well, we're spending hundreds of billions of dollars on Obamacare right now. So, I mean, this is like a drop in the bucket. And you would have everybody covered for any kind of pre-existing condition. And by doing that with these high-risk pools in all 50 states, you're right, Craig, your premiums would plummet, absolutely plummet, because these outlying folks with these bad medical conditions, pre-existing conditions, would be out of the risk pool. So when David and I worked through this, if you expanded health savings accounts, added direct primary care, it had price transparency, where actually docs, hospitals, pharmacies had to post their prices, God forbid. If you had insurance companies selling across state lines, if you had these high-risk pools we just talked about, if you actually created another kind of pool for small businesses where small business could all pool their employees together to get better prices from the insurance companies, here's what we found. Premiums for you and me and every one of our listeners would go down by about 80%.
Oy.
In 24 hours.
Doc, that doesn't empower the existing system.
That's exactly it, Craig. It doesn't empower government bureaucrats. It doesn't empower insurance companies. It makes it so the insurance company's executives can't pull down $20 million a year plus their benefits.
Right. And the pharmacy companies and the healthcare providers and the hospitals and everybody else who then pass along as campaign donations, you know, money to Paul Ryan and everybody else to perpetuate the system. I mean,
instead, we're writing legislation that allows companies to deduct the higher salaries for all these CEOs that we mentioned earlier, that allows hospitals to create these huge windfall of profits of write-offs that generate more money into their coffers.
Yeah. All right, Doc,
it's so bass backwards, it makes you want to scream.
I got to keep moving. Question from Info. Is that, it sounds like a racket to me. Is that anything that could be attacked under the RICO Act?
You know, I think anything and everything can be attacked under the RICO Act.
I suppose that's true.
Right? The way business models are constructed now around the world, I think you could run a RICO Act against anything and almost everything other than small mom and pop businesses.
Good point. What doesn't fit into it? All right. Patrick Dillon wants to ask you about what's the doctor from Canada that was head of the Canadian CDC, Shiv Chopra?
Shiv Chopra. He was in charge of Health Canada, which is the Canadian version of the FDA. Dr. Shiv Chopra.
And I've talked to you before about how I'm giving up on the flu vaccine because it makes me sick every time I take it. And you said, hey, just ask your doctor for one that doesn't have preservatives in it, and that might help. Yeah. And I appreciate that. This question is about vaccines. Is it the vaccine itself, or is it the preservatives that do the damage? Because Patrick has a question. He says, I don't vaccinate my kids, but I've got 8 doctors in my family, and they all disagree with me. But my twins are high-functioning autistic, and their doctor agrees with our decision. They had to move to a different state just to get care. Why are so few internists, pediatricians, why are there so few in this anti-vaccination thing? And is it the problem? Is the problem with the vaccine itself, or is the problem with the preservatives and everything else that's in them?
Okay, so if you ask Shiv that question, he will tell you that there's a problem with the preservatives, and in most vaccines, there's a problem with the entity involved in the vaccine itself, the virus. And the reason is because those are not pure viruses. They are mixed with other viruses from other animals and other DNA, and ultimately that the base of a vaccine could actually alter some of your own DNA. That's what Shiv will tell you. Hmm. Now, I don't have the research experience. I haven't done the research on that. I can tell you, I do believe Shiv. I think he's an incredibly honest man. I know for a fact he's not bought off and paid off. I know for a fact his life is continually on the line for what he says. I know the science, having had a chemistry degree in college, of what aluminum and formaldehyde and mercury can do to your vital organs, okay? And those are the preservatives in vaccines, okay?
Right.
I can tell you they are neurotoxins to 100% certainty. I do believe they have an adverse effect on the body, and they are cumulative, okay? I believe that. I believe it is scientifically proven hundreds of times. As far as the virus, Shiv has evidence based on the research that he has been exposed to, that the underlying viruses in these vaccines can, at a minimum, not have any, just essentially be dormant entities that aren't going to do anything for you, versus some of which that can have what he believes is an adverse effect. Now, I know when we talked about this last time when I was on with you, there was a particular individual who came down on me about being a quack and talking about this stuff, and I think I effectively shut that son of a bitch down. But the bottom line, and I say that not to be mean, I say that because I believe this guy who tried to denigrate me was actually part of the problem in medicine, in that he refuses to look at the information, the literature, and the research that's out there, which is significant about some of the real problems with these vaccinations. Now, I can tell you that Trump is intent on really getting to the bottom of the vaccination issue. And after he was elected, before he took office, he had Robert Kennedy Jr. come, who's a very anti-vaccination guy. It's right. My understanding that Kennedy has been tasked with setting up a task force to investigate the vaccination issue. Now, there are many people that believe the reason why Trump is so interested and adamant about getting to the bottom of this is because his son Barron, his youngest son Barron, could well have some autistic symptoms.
Yeah.
And based on the medical input both of Barron's parents have had with the medical community from around the world and some of the best people, there could well have been an indication that there was linkage between some of the symptoms Barron has and its relationship to a vaccination. And I believe Trump will actually, I think, get to the bottom of this. I do. I think he'll probably get to it hopefully sooner rather than later. Because let me tell you something. As a doc, I hope to God that people getting vaccinations are actually being helped. I want that to be the case. But I was taught that vaccinations really make a positive difference for people. Yet, where did I get that information? That information was delivered to me by people who had a vested interest in the products that were being pushed as vaccinations. You know, these pharmaceutical companies use this as a huge money maker.
Yeah, they
shove a huge amount of money into every medical school, every residency program, to keep this dogma alive. And if you speak against it, your funding is pulled, you're ostracized, and the like. Right. And you know what? The bottom line is the information that Shiv has on his site, that Shiv has shared with me, to me is incontrovertible. I read it. I wasn't happy about it. I felt I had been lied to for decades about this stuff. But I can tell you, Dave Janda feels as though the preservatives are a huge known problem. And as far as the viruses, I don't have the research experience. I haven't done the research myself, but I can tell you someone I know and trust, Shiv Chopra, has, and he says, not in all cases, but in some cases, these underlying viruses that are used in the vaccinations can be a problem.
That's like anything else. Everybody has to do their own due diligence, find people that they can trust, use their own brains, and decide for yourself. But again, this issue is no, as you identified, is no different from what we fight every day. I mean, if you question the dollar-based system, you get ridiculed by everybody who's got their hands and their fingers in the dollar-based system and their livelihood is based on it, you know, as some kind of conspiracy theorist. If you question on a smaller scale, like global warming, everybody, you know, there's all this kind of study that's ridiculous, but the 95% consensus all gets their money and their grants and everything else from these governments, and so, again, you're treated as a heretic if you question it. It's the same thing.
And Craig, you were a bad guy by questioning Jeffrey Christian. And you were a bad guy by questioning Trader Dan. and you're demonized for that. Okay, well, you know, okay. You know, you're just doing your own due diligence and doing your own research and said, you know what, the emperor has no clothes here.
And it's the same thing. And you see it all the time. If you question anybody's, especially when it gets down to dollars and cents, and everybody's got their fingers in the, you know, in the pie, that's where the all of, you know, that's where everybody really comes at you with the long knives. Dave, I got to keep moving. Again, now we're about 55 minutes into this, so let me just run through these. We'll try to hit these as quick as we can because I don't want to keep you all day. Ted wants me just to follow up because he said he didn't do a real good job of summarizing his question. Basically, he just says insurance companies cannot be competitive across state lines without a participating provider network accepting reduced fee schedules. Okay, yes, no?
I do believe Ted has a point there, but the other thing would be to free physicians out of these provider networks.
Yeah, okay. Of course, that would make sense too. That'd be the easier than trying to change to coordinate the provider networks.
Yeah, I mean, I understand Ted's question. I understand his concerns, and I think he's right on that. But I think there, right now, you got a bunch of physicians that are tied to provider networks, and I do believe that with competition, you can have insurance companies step in and change to say, okay, we're going to release you from the provider networks, because here's the bottom line: if people have health savings accounts, they automatically become better consumers and shoppers for health care. Okay?
Sure.
So if that means that if you have a health savings account and you can get a procedure done for $100 here, but if you go across state lines, you can get the similar procedure done for $50, you're going to go across that state line because you're controlling your own finances. You see, all that has to happen is have some insurance companies come in and say, you know what? The provider networks, we're going to do with our providers is we're opening it up. Some people say that's impossible to do, but I don't know. According to people in the industry, they tell me actually if they were pushed into it, they could do it.
Here's a question from KD, probably an easy one to answer for you. I really want to give Trump the benefit of the doubt. Will he, over time, really drain the swamp, or were we duped again?
You know, I hope he can drain the swamp. I think it's a battle right now, huge battle. I think it's a huge, and the swamp is really the deep state. I think he obviously is at risk every day for doing what he's trying to do. I think he really does want to. I do believe, and many people say, well, if he really did want to, why does he have a bunch of Goldman Sachs guys in his back pocket there, Mnuchin and all these other guys? Look, here's how I think it works. And I know this is what happened with Reagan. You take power, you get visited. If you want to live, you're going to do this, and this.
Yeah.
I think that Reagan did that by having Bush as his vice president. Almost killed him, in fact, that happened. But and Trump did it by having the Goldman Sachs guys involved.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this much. In the interactions I've had with the Bannon wing, if you will, everybody's playing checkers, and I mean this. Trump is playing 3D chess. And if there's anybody that could at least puncture a hole in the swamp and get it partway drained, I think he's about the only guy who could do it.
And I do think
he's attempting to do that. It's just that they're throwing so much stuff in the air to try to block him, whether it's the Russia thing or you name it, across the board. You know, they're doing everything in their power to try to block him. And I think that what we're seeing is desperation on the swamp side, panic on the swamp side. Because, and this brings me to the other issue, is because what this is all about, the opposition to Trump, the way, and listen to the interview I did with Robert David Steele, former CIA clandestine officer on our show. He was on last week, and then he was on about 3 weeks before that. What the deep state uses to bribe and blackmail both parties is the issue of pedophilia. I know it's conspiratorial, but I can tell you it is the case. And what this is all about, this opposition to Trump, is because, and this is the opposition to Sessions, because Sessions and Trump have decided that the Achilles heel of the deep state is the pedophilia issue.
Wow.
And that means people on both sides, Republicans and Democrats, are gonna get hammered, no pun intended to the hammer, but are gonna get hammered in this, and that you have seen more pedophiles arrested in the past 2.5 months since Trump took office than you have probably in many years combined. And that's just not coincidence. These networks are being taken down, and there's going to come a day when it becomes where even the lamestream fake media has to address the issue.
Well, that kind of does. You mentioned hammer, in almost in a pun, but it does get to Info's other question about the primary purpose of the hammer being for control files, blackmail files for everybody, like we talked about with Justice Roberts. Mm-hmm. Would that be the case? Do you want to? Is that pretty
yes.
much what it's there for? Okay.
Yes.
Just a couple.
I asked Robert David Steele was on the show last week. He is CIA former clandestine officer. I asked him what percentage of people in Washington are compromised either with bribes or with blackmail, and he had also brought up the pedophile issue, and he said combination bribes, blackmail, 100% of people are compromised.
Goodness gracious. Well, yeah. 47 hard drives and 600,000 documents ought to get just about everybody. The question came up about, and I deleted it accidentally, so I can't remember who it was from, just about non-AMA doctors operating out of the U.S. and doing procedures, if I remember this right. Is there an index anywhere? Is there a way people can find out, do research on procedures and doctors outside of the U.S. that might offer alternatives?
You know what? I'm not familiar with that, but there must be. I'm not familiar with that. I don't know where you could turn to that. Maybe do a search on medical tourism, best places, best quality medical tourism locations.
There you go. A question from, you touched upon this earlier too, about private practices being purchased by hospitals just because hospitals get paid so much more money than the private practices. This guy said that's what's happening in Washington State. I would imagine that's all part of Obamacare and will continue at least indefinitely.
So what happens is they make it so onerous to practice medicine. For example, part of Obamacare is everybody has to have electronic medical record system in their offices so that when you see the patient, the information immediately goes to not only insurance companies but to Washington, D.C., so they can monitor your care, so they can see if you're actually following their rationing formulas once they would be coming into place, which they started coming into place at the beginning of January of 2017, which is when I retired and why I retired. So what they try to do is they create these regulations, these expenses. For example, in our practice, the seven physicians, we didn't go over to electronic medical records. We refused. We were penalized. We were getting 20% less reimbursement from the government because we wouldn't go along with that. But those fines gradually would increase with time. But they try to make it so expensive. So for our practice of seven physicians, the cost was going to be around $400,000. Well, that's huge. How are you ever going to make that up? And that doesn't include the monthly, annually, all the IT fees. That's just getting it in there. So what's happening is a lot of physician practices are saying, well, if I have to do this, I can't afford this. And the hospitals come in and go, you know what, we're flush with dough. We're not going to pay you what we think you're worth, but we'll make it so that we'll cover your electronic medical record systems, and you know what, we'll just call it even and we'll do that. And a lot of docs are so tired of taking on the system that they go, okay, fine. And they buckle, and you can understand why they buckle.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that a lot of these big companies that are buying doctor's offices were given subsidies in Obamacare for the utilization of electronic medical record systems. So the government shoots these entities money, says, okay, we're going to give you $1 billion, and this can be used for electronic medical record systems, and then these big hospital corporations use it to buy physician practices.
How about that? Our retirement deal with medical records. All right, two last questions in queue, and then we'll let you go, because, again, we're now over an hour. But, I mean, we could talk all day, but I don't want to. I mean, I got to be respectful of your time, too. Gabe just wants to know, and I'm going to add something to this. Says, will Trump let the Obama subsidies that are being paid to those insurers participating in the federal health care exchanges expire in a few months, which would ultimately completely implode Obamacare? And additionally, here's one for you. Why doesn't Trump just sign an executive order forcing all Congress people to comply with it? Because, you know, they've got their exempted from Obamacare. So why doesn't Trump sign an executive order forcing them to be a part of it too?
Actually, whoever made that suggestion, and I think it's a great idea, and in fact, I made that suggestion. I made that suggestion to Trump's people.
And they said, we're not.
Good idea. Okay, I haven't heard anything more. Now, as far as this, the subsidies, you know what? The magic date is May 22nd of this year, right? Trump has to decide if they're going to provide the subsidies to insurers for remaining in the exchanges for people. And that adds up to about a $10 billion payment in 2018.
Wow.
So here's what he's facing. I'm going to have to pay the insurance companies $10 billion on May 22nd to stay in the exchanges, or I just don't do that, and that means the whole thing blows up. Or, and this is why I think you're seeing them trying to really push it, because, you know, these clowns are going on vacation again for another couple weeks, right? I think they only have, like, another week before they go on vacation for another 3.
Days,
Yeah, so this is why I think you're going to see a bit of a push now over the next week to possibly hammer out something because of this payment coming due. So, but here's what I think. If push comes to shove and he doesn't have his new whatever version of Ryan Care this is going to be that they're going to try to pull, I guess. If he doesn't have that, my guess is that he'll pay the $10 billion. This is, as a businessman, I think this is what he'll do. He'll pay the $10 billion to keep Obamacare alive, knowing full well Obamacare was created to implode, as was Ryan Care, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And he'll let it implode and then hang it and say, well, you see, I knew this was going to happen. I didn't really have a choice. But if you want to blame anybody, blame the Dems and Obama, because they're the one who created this mess. So when push comes to shove, if there isn't a new version on the table, he will reluctantly pay the $10 billion, knowing full well, and I think I have driven this point across home to people in the White House, when it fails, if Ryan Care went through, it would have been called Trump Care failed, not Obamacare.
Right.
Okay? So you guys decide what name you want on it when it blows up. Or your other alternative is to do it right and come up with a really good approach that easily can be implemented and help everybody.
Gabe followed up, just for everybody out there, I don't know, Doc, you might look into this yourself. Gabe followed up, said the best site he's found for medical travel is MT as in Tom, QUA.org, MTQUA.org. Lastly, Doc, this is part of the final four, but it's not. This is one last question, then we'll get to the final four. But you have a chemistry degree. I've studied a lot of chemistry in college as well in my years that I was pre-dent and pre-med and all that kind of stuff that I thought would help me, you know, get the chicks when I was a freshman. Look, I think I've been pretty reasonably vocal on my side. I think this idea of chemtrails and spreading chemicals at 37,000 feet, the concentration, molarity, all that stuff that would be needed to have any impact at all with diffusion and osmosis and everything else that's involved. Not osmosis, that's water, but you get the idea. I just don't buy it, and I've been, but hey, everybody, I'm not saying I'm right, that's just my personal opinion. Scott yeah. wants to know what you think about chemtrails and how that might be impacting our health.
Well, here we go again. It's kind of like the vaccination thing. So when I first started to hear about chemtrails, I go, all right, this to me sounds conspiracy theory. And so I kind of, you know, just kept looking up in the air and in the sky and watching these checkerboards up in the sky going, well, there are a lot of jets and they're a contrail. You know, that's not a chemtrail. It's a contrail. It's exhaust. And then I see a plane go by and it didn't have any exhaust. And I go, well, how come that one doesn't have exhaust, but the other? Anyway, you know, so I just said, nah, well, okay. And then I got a call from a four-star general. I said, Dave, this is about 3 years ago. Now, I haven't heard you talk about this on your show, and I think you should. Now, this was a four-star general in the Air Force who was in charge of weather modification programs for the United States government. And he said, Dave, you've seen those vapor trails in the sky. I said, yeah. He goes, well, Dave, they're not vapor trails. They're what some people call chemtrails. And people better realize what the hell's going on here. And there's one scientist in the world that I think you need to get on your show who is articulate, has the research background, and can discuss this. And his name is Dane Whittington. And Dane has been on my show now a number of times. And Dane, with the and he has a great site, geoengineeringwatch.org, geoengineeringwatch.org. Incredibly scientific information there, documented, well-researched. And I have come, and so anyway, when I said to this general, I said, okay, well, all right, so you mean to tell me that they really are spraying stuff? He goes, that's what I'm telling you. And I said, so come on. Who and why are they doing this? And he said, Dave, you know, I listen to your show all the time, and you know how you talk about the financial powers that be that are they're modifying and manipulating the financial system, and in particularly manipulating gold and silver? I go, yeah. He goes, that's the same people that are doing this. It's what you call the globalists.
For weather modification?
Yep.
Okay.
And it all comes down, and he goes, so you need to sit down. And you need to sit down, and he goes, you know what Agenda 21 is? Because you talk about it on your show, the UN directive, signed by Bush 1 in 1991, supported by Clinton, Bush, and Obama. He goes, you need to go back and read Agenda 21 with an eye in the sky as you read the Agenda 21 and read the supplement. And actually, when I went back, he goes, just keep it in mind as you read it this time. And I went back, and I got the agenda. I had Agenda 21 here. I started reading through it. And a lot of stuff started to kind of click and make sense. So this week, in addition to Larry Klayman, in addition to Dr. Jim Garrow, I'm also having Dane Whittington on the show. And Dane is, again, going to address these issues of weather modification, of chemtrails versus contrails, vapor trails, and discuss this and exactly why this is being done. And for what purpose, who benefits. But the interesting thing, I have to say, several years ago, Dane said, you know, Dave, there's this whole die-off population of bees occurring, and everybody's trying to figure out why. He goes, in the research that I'm familiar with, he goes, you will start to see eventually it's going to be reported that these bees have heavy levels of aluminum in them, and that's why they're dying. Well, sure as shooting, what, about 3 months ago, there was some independent studies done that showed that the bee population colonies are going down, and what they're finding is high concentrations of aluminum. So,
and it's aluminum that's sprayed.
Aluminum salts, weather. Barium salts. Yeah, mainly aluminum and barium salts.
All right, I'll listen Sunday with an open mind. I can at least
listen to open eye. And remember, this is the same aluminum that they're putting in vaccination.
Right, exactly. And we know that, and I remember from years ago, aluminum being, I guess, one of the primary potential culprits of cognitive disorders like Alzheimer's and dementia and things like that, right?
They have neurotoxic effects, correct.
Right. Now, like I said, I'll keep an open mind, and I'm willing to at least think of it as from a globalist control the weather point of view. I have a problem. People try to extend that into, you know, they're spraying shit from 37,000 feet to affect behavior directly.
I'm not convinced that this is affecting behavior. I believe. So then you say, well, okay, these pilots that are doing this, why are they doing it? Because they're told they're actually doing a service to humanity, because by spraying this stuff in the air, what they're doing is they're blocking these sun rays from coming in, and it's helping
stopping
prevent global warming.
Right.
Okay, that's what they're being told.
Right.
But in fact, by doing what they're doing, they're not. I don't believe this is affecting people's behavior. No, I don't believe that. I do believe it is adversely affecting our environment. I do believe it's adversely affecting people's health. And I actually believe it could almost cause a greenhouse effect by putting these particles in the air that creates essentially like a big greenhouse effect.
Yeah, maybe it's they accomplish the opposite of what they think they're...
Exactly.
All right, Doc, that is 75 minutes of bliss, so I'm going to stop here. I know, but I got to tell you, again, I wish we could do this every day. I mean, I think everybody listening is going to go, God, that was an hour and 15 minutes. Are you crazy? That was fantastic. And again, everybody, should just be sure to listen. The link, the radio station is WAAM WAM. All you got to do is Google WAM, WAAM on Sundays. There's a link right on the WAM radio homepage. The station in Michigan that carries the doctor's show, and you can listen live. What is it, 3 o'clock Eastern, Doc?
Oh, two. It's our 3-hour show, so it's on from 2 to 5 Eastern every Sunday. They can stream the show at DaveJanda.com. And then we also have the new YouTube channel up. If they just go to YouTube, search under Dave Janda or Operation Freedom, usually Dave Janda can do it. They can subscribe, and then, you know, they get shot to them. I do about 3 5-minute, they're not long, 3 5-minute videos a week. And hey, can I just hit you with one other thing? Because I think people are going to start to see this in the headlines. It's something
sure.
that I was actually working on with some guys in Washington this morning. On MSNBC recently, with good old Mika Brzezinski, whose father, Ziggy, is one of the guys who started the Trilateral Commission with the Rockefeller, dude, David Rockefeller, she was interviewing a former Defense Department official under Obama by the name of Evelyn Frakas, F-R-A-K-A-S.
Yeah.
And in this interview, she unintentionally mentioned that in 2016, we in the Obama administration were monitoring Trump and his relations to Russia. Okay, so essentially, she confirmed that in fact they were monitoring Trump. Well, here's the little interesting thing on Frakas. I spoke to some folks in D.C. about this morning. Frakas resigned from her Pentagon position in September 2015. Oh, wait a minute.
Hold on.
If she resigned in September 2015, how did she know the Obama administration was monitoring Trump and potential Russia connections in 2016?
Yeah.
Because the added thing to the mix is that at the time this was supposedly going on, monitoring Trump, she had become one of Hillary Clinton's senior policy advisors on Russia.
Hmm. Interesting.
So everybody keep their antenna up about this Frakas person, this Evelyn Frakas, because one, she admitted that the Obama administration was monitoring, surveilling Trump, which they said they weren't, which, you know, there's some criminal issues there. And two, how did she know about it if she was working for Hillary at the time? Because she was no longer in the Pentagon. And by the way, Craig, here's one question for you. Do you know where Barack Obama is right now?
I don't know. Where is he? Oh, he's living in Washington, D.C. with Valerie Jarrett. But where is he physically at this moment? I don't know.
Yeah. Are you aware that he has decided to take at least a one-month vacation to Tahiti without Michelle or the girls?
Really? Good for him.
He got out of Dodge right when it hit about Dennis Montgomery coming out.
How about that?
He got in a plane, and he went to Tahiti. No one is unable to see him or get near him or get in contact with him for at least a month.
That's good work if you can get it, Doc.
Yeah.
I'd go to Tahiti for a month, leave everybody behind. That doesn't sound half bad to me.
No, I. You know what, though? I would imagine you'd at least take
Take my cell
Mrs.
phone.
Hemke,
Yeah.
and I would think at least you would kind of arrange for the daughters to go on a nice family trip.
You're probably right. You're probably right.
Because
Here.
remember, he was always the big family guy, right? Yeah, right.
Right. Let me ask you, and then I'm going to ask you one more thing, since I'll just take 2 more minutes of your time, I guess. It's pretty clear. Mike Krieger, who you know very well, had a series of two or three exposés in a row showing that all of this joke of information about the Russians hacking the DNC came through this organization, CrowdStrike, which is clearly part of the War Party, close ties to the Atlantic Council, and the whole globalist group. And now this lie—again, you repeat a lie often enough, and people just begin to accept it as truth, right? The Russians hacked the election. How they did? Well, they didn't hack the election. They hacked the DNC, and they put all this out there to help Trump, and Trump colluded with them, and all this kind of stuff. Well, anyway, all that, we all know all that's BS. One of your folks, your connections, anybody ever talk about Seth Rich? A kid from the DNC that even Assange kind of alluded to, that Seth Rich was the guy that gave all the DNC emails to WikiLeaks, and Seth Rich was then murdered at 5 o'clock in the morning crossing the street, and WikiLeaks has about a $200,000 reward fund set up for anybody with information. Well, why would WikiLeaks care about Seth Rich if he wasn't their source? I'm just curious, to the extent you can comment on that.
Yeah, a guy who actually went on record on this on my show, Dr. Jim Garrow, who will be on this week again, he was on, I think, 2 visits ago, and we specifically talked about Seth Rich. And Jim, who I believe, I've never found any of his contacts or his information to be erroneous. When he says things, you might go, forget it. That's way out there. It can't be true. And sure enough, it always turns out to be the case. Jim said in no uncertain terms that Seth Rich was killed, that Seth Rich was one of the leakers. This is not a hack, a leak. This is one of the leakers of the information. Understand something, Garrow is communicates with Assange. So
No, he would know.
he would know.
And again,
And
and just a background for everybody that's still listening. I mean, Seth Rich worked for the DNC, but he was a major Bernie Sanders supporter within the. I mean, he made it pretty clear he was a Bernie Sanders supporter. And what was, initially what was leaked, what really got the headlines, was the collusion within the Democrat National Committee to exclude Sanders, to not give him a chance. And so you can connect the dots to see where this guy would say, "Hey, screw this." And he'd be, he'd take some files and want to give them to somebody to shine the light on what happened to Sanders and how he never got a fair shot. But anyway, continue.
Well, the new head of the DNC, day before yesterday, he fired everybody in the DNC, right?
Yeah, right.
And so why would he do that? It's because he knows he has other leakers there, and he doesn't know who they are.
And doesn't know who to trust, yeah.
And he doesn't know who to trust because he doesn't know where the next bombshell is going to come from. So that's why he fired all of them.
So anyway,
Yeah.
Dr. Garrow has said that, yeah, that Seth Rich, as WikiLeaks kind of alluded to, was, and so anyway, that's where the lie.
He said in no uncertain terms, Seth Rich was killed, and he was killed because he was one of the leakers.
And we can't have that truth come out, and so instead we started, we almost immediately start cooking up a story that it was the rascally Russians that did it. And then in the end, that all feeds into the war party narrative, of the new Cold War
And when
all of those
and part of the
things.
globalist arm, as you and I have spoken of, as all the turdites know, one of the tentacles of the globalist arm is the bought off lamestream fake media, and then they just go with this, and they're hoping that the whatever percent of the sheeple in our country that still actually watch CNN and MSNBC and NBC and CBS and ABC and even Fox and believe what they say, just go, okay, yeah, Russian hack. When in fact, the people with by far the most overt and covert relationship with the Russians were in fact the Clintons and the people around them. Whether it's selling 20% of the uranium for a $145 million donation to the Clinton Foundation or Bill Clinton getting a $500,000 check from a Russian bank, you know, that was involved in the Uranium One deal. You know, I mean, it's all Podesta's group for I think he had 75,000 shares that he didn't disclose that were in a Russian company, or the fact that the Podesta group with him and his brother were lobbyists for the Uranium One deal, and I don't know how much they made. They made, $147,000 on that deal, and the ties are all, but the lamestream fake media is not going to talk about that.
Right.
In fact, they have to try to cover it up.
Exactly.
And they
have their storyline, and that allows them to construct the narrative, and then the narrative is shoved down your throat enough until it's disbelieved.
It all comes down to something we touched on earlier. They have to discredit Trump and his election, and they will do everything in their power to impeach him or get rid of him because he is on the trail of what is the Achilles heel of the globalists, the deep state. That's the pedophile issue. I know it sounds conspiratorial. I know it sounds out there. I am telling you that it is what it's all about. And one real brief little thing, if you have a couple minutes. When I first went to D.C. in 1988, when Reagan asked me to come there and work on healthcare policy, I worked with C. Everett Koop and Jack Kemp, who was a congressman at the time. Okay, and we're at this domestic policy council meeting, and it's just a shit show. Okay, of the Bush people going after the Reagan people and all this kind of stuff. And I look at Kemp and I go, "What the hell is going on here? Everybody should be on the same page." And he goes, "Well, we're not going to talk in here." Okay, so this is 88. We're not going to talk in the White House. Okay, I kind of look at him like, "What?" You know, he goes, "No, we'll go for a walk and we'll talk out there." So we go for a walk and we're talking about some other things. And then he looks at me, he goes, "You know, Dave, you're an honest, straightforward guy who cares about the country. He's a really good family guy." And he goes, "I want to give you a piece of advice now that you're going to be spending some time in Washington." And I said, "Okay." He goes, "Never go to a private party in Washington unless it's at the White House." I look at him and go, "What?" He goes, "If you're invited to a private party at the White House, go. You'll be fine." But he goes, "I don't care who it is. If it's a private party, never go to it because you will become entrapped in a situation that will harm you and compromise you." I'm like, "Jack, what are you talking about?" He goes, "Look." He goes, "There's a huge problem in this city that no one wants to talk about, or the press will never report. And that relates to child trafficking and pedophilia." And he said, "Dave, you might be invited to a private party. You're at this private party at this congressman's house. You'll see some kids walking around, younger kids, and you'll go, 'Oh, that must be Congressman so-and-so's kids.' And next thing you know, somebody will be taking a picture of you near these kids. And then these same people will approach you days, weeks, months later with pictures of you by these kids at this party, and then pictures of these kids with other adults doing nefarious acts. And they will essentially try to manipulate you and blackmail you into making it look like you were involved in something nefarious." He goes, "Dave, never go to a private party."
I don't even know.
And I'm telling you, Craig, I never did. I know I'm a boring guy. I wasn't going to do that anyway. But the bottom line is, I mean, I looked at, and he looked at me, and I'm thinking, you know, "Jack, you're kind of off your nut here a little bit, you know?" And he's like, I mean, this is 1988. And then fast forward to a couple years after that when I gave some congressional testimony and I got called in to see Lee Atwater, who was the then chairman of the Republican Party. And there are very few conversations. That Kemp conversation is one I relive almost every day. But here's a conversation I relive every day. I walk into Atwater's office because his aide asked me to come to meet with him because they like my testimony so much. And I walk in, and Atwater's sitting there playing the guitar, sitting at his desk. And I remember he ran Bush, George H.W.'s campaign, and he was now chairman of the Republican Party. He said, "Yeah, Dr. Janet, have a seat." He goes, and TV was on, C-SPAN was on. He goes, "I watched your testimony on C-SPAN. You did absolutely fantastic." I go, well, thanks very much. It's nice of you to say that. He goes, "No, you have a very good ability to communicate." He said, "Now, I'm telling you this as a friend." I go, "Okay.
Okay.
I just met you, so okay." He goes, "Based on what I saw today," He goes, I decided while you were on your way over here to do a little research, and I know you're married, and I know you have a little baby daughter with red hair. Okay. He said, based on your level of communication and what you did today at Congress, in front of that congressional committee, I believe somewhere along the line you'll be approached to run for political office. Whether it's the House, the Senate, governor, health, he goes, hell, for all I know, even president, he goes, you know what? Based on what I saw today, and I'm pretty good at this, he goes, you'll win. He goes, but understand something. And honest to God, Craig, and the only time, my parents know this conversation, my wife, my kids, but I told it the other day when I was interviewed by John B. Wells on Caravan for Midnight, and that's all I'll tell you. And I haven't even said this on my show. He looks at me and he goes, direct quote, which is why I think about every quote, Dave, you are an albino in a sea of black. If you run for political office and you will win, they will kill you. And I don't mean figuratively. I mean literally. They will kill you. You are honest. You cannot be bought. And the way they handle that is they will kill you. And if you expect your wife not to be a widow and you expect your daughter to know who her daddy is, you will never run for political office, end quote.
Well, Dave, on that happy note, but seriously, I'm sitting here, I hear that story, I hear the story you told before about Kemp, and I'm thinking, what are we even trying to accomplish? I mean, how is that ever defeated?
Here's the thing. There are really good people in government that are freedom fighters. I know.
Yeah, they all have pictures.
A lot of those people I've brought on my show. There are freedom fighters in every aspect of our government that have been fighting for decades against this criminal syndicate.
No, we can't. But if they've already been fighting for decades, Dave, how are we ever supposed to beat them?
Well, we did in November. You see, although there's some globalists that surround Trump, and he circles in the globalist system, I believe he's not one of them. And the reason is because of this opposition to him. You see, Hillary was supposed to, the election was rigged for her to win. And then she didn't. And she didn't because of the massive voter turnout and because many of the machines that were, if you will, tilted her way were taken out of the system within 48 hours before the election occurred by federal marshals. Dr. Jim Garrow has also talked about that on my show a couple visits ago, right after the election. And we actually had a huge win in November. That doesn't mean he's going to do everything we want. But what it does mean is that for the first time, and when I started my show in October 2010, the first thing I said, Craig, the first thing, and everybody went crazy when I said this, I said the day Ronald Reagan left office in January 1989, our country forever changed because every person that's occupied that office has been owned and operated by the criminal and national banking syndicate New World Order globalist crowd, end quote. And that was true up until November of 2016.
Man.
And that is how we beat these guys. Here's how we beat them. We got Trump is there. Trump and Sessions are fighting these bastards every day 24/7, which is why you're seeing this incredible opposition. And it's the same reason why Trump has hired his own private security firm. Okay?
That's probably a good
idea. I'm not going to go into details, but there are hundreds and hundreds of private security individuals protecting him. And that's there not because he's paranoid. It's because he's a realist.
Yeah, it would be prudent, yeah.
And understand something. As he takes down this deep state from inside, and the way he's doing it, a lot has to do with the pedophile issue. And as he takes it down, you're going to see the whole thing shatter into 1,000 pieces. And that is how we win.
Don't you? I guess we'll just leave it there. I mean, we could just continue to I almost feel like we could talk in circles at this point about how are they, you know, it's never going to make it that far. They're not going to allow it to get that far. They're going to, you know, they'll take him out before that type of thing ever happens. And we're kind of dealing with hypotheticals going forward. I hope you're right. We'll just leave it at that. I mean,
just keep their antennas up and watch and listen what's happening, not through the lamestream fake media, but a little bit there, because you can see how close they're getting based on how they're panicking. Okay? You can watch, I watch the lamestream fake media to see how they're reacting. And the more hysterical they're acting, the closer we are to winning this thing.
All right, Doc. We're now an hour and a half. How about that? So let's keep going. No, I'm kidding. You know the tradition. It's final four time as we go to wrap up. Just four quick, fun questions you can usually answer in a word or a sentence. So before we call today, can I hit you with number one?
Yeah.
And I wrote these down before we got started, so I'm going to go with them anyway. Number one, which current politician do you dislike the most?
Oh, Jesus. So somebody not in office, somebody in office.
In office, yeah.
In office, I would say Paul Ryan.
Oh, really? Okay. As I was thinking of that question, I thought if anybody asked me that, I'd say John McCain. All right.
Well, you know what? He's up there. He's up there too. But here's why I didn't say John McCain, because people have figured him out. Many people have not figured Paul Ryan out. He's a wolf in sheep's clothing. Yeah, and a lot of people haven't figured him out yet. And I know that because people are blowing me all kinds of smoke for going up against Ryan here.
Gotcha. All right. What is your favorite movie of all time?
Dave.
I love that movie too. And if anybody has never seen it, Dave, came out 20 years ago with Kevin Kline. Fantastic movie.
Yeah, and it's not because it's named Dave and I'm, you know, Dave, but it's, let me tell you something. The underlying storyline about what you see and hear in Washington is essentially all bullshit, and they're really up to other things besides, you know, and it's not having to do with something that's going to help you. That's why I like that movie, because I believe it's the most realistic movie about Washington.
Ivan Reitman, I believe, was the producer of that, director of that movie. Great show. Again, Dave. I've looked for it on Netflix because I want to show it to my daughters, and it's hard to find sometimes. But it's
no, they don't want you to see it anymore.
Right.
Because it's too close to home, man.
All right. Will the Detroit Lions ever win a Super Bowl? Oh,
never.
All right, never. I can go along with that. Never's a long time, but I'm inclined to believe you.
No, never.
All right, and lastly, a report from the CBO today about debt and deficits. And so to that end, which comes first, $30 trillion in stated U.S. debt or $30,000 on the Dow?
I'm thinking $30,000 on the Dow.
Fair enough. All right, again, Doc, Operation Freedom is the weekly program. You can also be found YouTube, website that you're building, any place, anything else, anybody else, anything else people need to know about where to find you.
Nope, DaveJanda.com, YouTube, put in Dave Janda, Operation Freedom. Operation Freedom, like you said, you can stream it at DaveJanda.com. That's it, and I do post at TF Metals, and I thank you, Craig, for all that you do in providing your expertise, your knowledge, and also the platform for all of us to be able to communicate, because that's the key.
I will see you at Detention Center 12B outside of Minot, North Dakota when we get there.
Well, you know what? That was a definite possibility if Hillary would have won.
It's still a possibility, my friend.
It's still a possibility, but a little less so. But, you know, it's always still a possibility.
All right, Doc. I will now officially give you the rest of the day off. Thank you so much for all you do. We look forward to your program on Sunday and every Sunday going forward. Thank you for everything.
I thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for all that you do.
And for everybody, thanks for hanging in there and listening to this entire podcast. I hope you found it interesting and helpful. We will do this again next week.